This seminar by Andy Farmer, titled Pastors and Artist Musicians Working Together, is made available to you through Sovereign Grace Ministries. It was recorded at our Worship God 2008 conference. Andy serves as a pastor at Covenant Fellowship Church in Glen Mills, Pennsylvania.
Well, this seminar, Bob asked me about doing it, a little bit of background on it. You want me to talk about pastoring worship team stuff, and he said, actually, no, we got that covered, buddy. So he said, I'd like to talk about a little bit broader about how to work with musicians, artists, musicians. And so this outline is really designed to help you think beyond just worship team for other types of artists you have in your church. It's going to be geared to primarily musicians who may or may not be worship team type folks. Maybe they play an instrument that isn't a worship instrument you would use in your worship. Maybe they for whatever reason are not inclined to play on the worship team. But we're thinking beyond that. We're including folks who would be on a worship team, but we're thinking beyond that to other gifted people. And actually, we'll touch on something even broader, just the function of the arts in the church. Very, very hot topic these days. The emerging church is all about the use of the arts, the rediscovery of the arts, the bringing the arts back into the church, reacting to, I think, a very functional view of art that took place in the past 20 years, where art was viewed as a tool to be used by the church for outreach and other things. One of the things you see in the emerging church is a tendency for art to be seen, to be valued for itself, and to be seen as something that is an environment for worship itself. And so there's a lot of talk about that, a lot of stuff out there about the role of the arts in worship, the role of the arts in the local church. And a lot of churches being built up around artists, around people who are there, who are Christians, or who are confessing to be Christians, probably most of them are, but who are very consciously wanting to build a church around the arts. You see urban churches now emerging. Tim Keller's done a lot of great stuff, trying to build a model where artists can flourish and interact. But it's a big issue. It's a big issue. And it's a big issue for Sovereign Grace. If you're a Sovereign Grace pastor, I think one of the things you recognize is that we don't tend to retain artists that well. If you're not somebody who serves on a worship team, we don't work hard to find outlets. We're pretty straightforward on here's what we do. Can you serve in children's ministry? Okay, great. You play the harp. Wonderful. Can you play for the first graders? We're very functional in that way. And we don't, most of us don't come from the kind of background where they've really given a lot of thought to the use of the arts. There are guys, Bob, obviously, Mark Altrogi is an artist. Was a visual artist, and other guys as well. But as a movement, we're also a very high commitment movement. We believe in the local church. We believe in commitment to the local church. We believe in building our lives meaningfully into the local church, which doesn't always fit the artist orientation or background or even in their profession, where the church is often seen as a place I go to, a place I might express my gifts in. But the idea of the kind of church commitment that we're talking about in Sovereign Grace, and I think in a lot of other churches that would be represented here at the conference, would not be it wouldn't be a place where artists would tend to flourish and flock. They would tend to come through and discover they're asking for a lot more from me than I can give if I'm going to pursue my art, and they move on. Or they don't feel the support or the community, they feel at odds with the average person in the church. And so what I'm trying to do in this seminar is just sort of, to use the words of Emerging Church, continue the conversation about how to work with artists and serve artists and how artists can view their participation in the local church. So again, if you're a pastor here, think this should apply somewhat a good bit to your worship team. But also, I want to kind of give you an idea of how to relate to folks who are not going to be on that core, but maybe have gifts and talents, and even beyond music. Fine artists, dramatic artists, film artists, a lot of different arts emerging in the church and among people. So we're going to talk about that. I go back to the musical Oklahoma and the song, Oh, the Farmer and the Cowboy Should Be Friends. And if you've ever seen that musical or heard that song, it's a song about how you've got farmers and cowboys and they just don't mix. And they're always getting in fights. And so they're this big kind of dance song where they talk about being friends. We need to be friends. And so there's something of that in this, that it seems like the pastor and the artist are constantly at odds in who they are and where they're going and what the function of pastoral ministry is if you're an artist, and what the function of art is if you're a pastor. And so what I'm hoping to do today is just begin to kind of close that gap a little bit to help us all think a little bit more about this in a way that can, as folks come into our church, God does bring people into our church, maybe through evangelism, who have artistic abilities, or through they come. If you're in a if you're near a college campus, a lot of times you're going to have an opportunity to interact with folks in this world. God is after the arts in our society, I think, and I think He wants the church to be part of that picture. In a musically saturated, self-absorbed culture, the God-glorifying work and relationship between a pastor and musicians or artists in the local church can deepen the worship of God's people and provide a compelling expression of the transforming power of the gospel. That's what I believe. I believe there's opportunity here. There's opportunity for artists here. There's opportunity for pastors here to open up a window into the gospel through the arts. But that has to be a stewarded opportunity. The church has tried it in the past and failed. The church has gone a lot of different directions using the arts with various degrees of success and much diversion from the true purpose of the church. And so we want to be careful, but we want to see the opportunity we have. The arts are a gift from God. And I've done thinking on this. I don't want to portray myself as an artist. My background really doesn't lend itself that way. Some musical background. I oversaw a worship team for a number of years at Covenant Fellowship. And then, and I oversee our drama ministry now. Some of this thinking actually comes from a sabbatical project I did about 4 years ago, where I just, as I was going through topics of things to do, I just settled on this idea of what I could just explore a biblical perspective on the arts, for my own edification, potentially for the help of the church. There wasn't a lot out there on it, and it interested me, and I thought, if I'm going to be out, we were out west, my family and I were out west, I thought, I don't want to be reading about sin. I don't want to be reading about, like, the stuff I do all the time in pastoral ministry. Let me take my brain somewhere I don't usually go. So I read about art. And so so this material is somewhat coming from that. Also, there's two outlines, two articles here that you can take with you. They come from that sabbatical. One is called Ideas for Developing a Vibrant and Biblically Sound Arts Culture in the Church. And it's basically, it comes from that sabbatical study, and it's really meant for pastors to help them think through how can we employ the arts. What are some, it's not much, so much practical how-tos as it is, what are some values that we need to keep in mind as we consider how we can use the arts in the culture. And so this is directed toward pastors. And then the other one, Important Values for Christian Artists. Again, this is broader than simply musicians. Anybody who's an artist, has an artist mindset, can help you understand important values that you need to consider and wrestle with. Feel free to, there's enough copies for you guys to take one of each if you want. What you will not see in these documents, just to prepare you for, you won't see a lot of biblical references. And the only reason you don't see that is because in the way I did my project, I did my scripture work in different documents. So These were not standalone. These were parts of a project that essentially had chapters to it. And so I had done other things dealing with a biblical view of arts, those kind of things, that these are based on. So I just didn't have time to go back and try to bring all that into play and make these longer. So I tried to keep these concise. There's quotes from my readings just to help you to think through this stuff. So I don't hold it out as where you go for all the biblical understanding. It's just things I read and thought about, things people were saying that I thought were interesting. I tried to put them together and create a document. So that's what it is. So we're going to be in Romans 12, that very important, massive transition in the book of Romans, the first 11 chapters, setting up and turning on this monumental, I appeal to you, therefore, brothers, on the basis of all that I've just said. And then Paul launches into application for the church in Rome. And so we're going to pick up that. These are familiar verses for you guys, so I'm going to read them and they're going to make some application from them. I appeal to you, therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. For by the grace given me, I say to everyone among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought, but to think with sober judgment, each according to the measure of faith that God has assigned. For as in one body we have many members, and the members do not all have the same function, so we, though many, are one body in Christ, and individually members of one another. Having gifts that differ according to the grace given to us, let us use them, if prophecy in proportion to our faith, if service in serving, the one who teaches in his teaching, the one who exhorts in his exhortation, the one who contributes in generosity, the one who leads with zeal, the one who does acts of mercy with cheerfulness. Let love be genuine. Abhor what is evil. Hold fast to what is good. Love one another with a brotherly affection. Outdo one another in showing honor. Now, we talk about this issue of pastors and artists. We talk about typically the differences. What are the differences between the pastor and the artist? And there are some significant differences we need to recognize. You see the word MA, that simply means musician artist. I'm going to talk about artists in general. You can reference musicians or beyond that if you want. But pastors and artists arrive in the church with different perspectives. The pastor is motivated to build and transmit. He is in that church to build the church and to transmit the truth of God to a people. Artists typically engage the church for the sake of experience and to express. They interact with the church. They often don't find themselves identifying like the pastor does. Artists in particular tend to be folks who, and I'm going to make a bunch of broad statements that I will trust that you discern, but artists tend to be folks who tend to not be folks who see themselves as in, but see themselves as folks on the outside observing, interacting with, relating to, and intaking and expressing in life. That's sort of an artistic mentality that you'll find is very common. And so there's a difference in the way we orient to the church. Pastors are embedded in the church. We exist in the church. We don't, you know, when we think of the church, when I think of the church as a pastor, I'm in the center of it. I am as deep into the church as a person can possibly get. I'm a pastor. The church, where the church goes, I go. And I find it very difficult to disconnect myself from the church. Artists, in particular, tend to be more interactive with the church. The church is part of their larger world. It's an influence among many influences. It's an environment among many environments. And it's a context among many contexts. Now, that's not unusual because most folks, there's nobody as embedded in the church as a pastor is. And so I think we always have to make sure that we don't see people's perspective on the church like ours do. People don't often don't care as much as we do about what's going on in the church. We find that when we have an event and half the people in the church show up and the other half didn't know what was happening. The world in which a pastor and musician also exist is changing. Many pastors now have some sort of a musical background. I mean, back in the day, what the musician or the artist dealt with, particularly musicians, pastors, different world. Now, a lot of times you'll find a pastor can very, very up on what's going on musically, particularly versed in it, may have played in some form in the past themselves, may have a musical background that makes it easy for them to relate. If they don't have the talent, they've been exposed. They have iTunes, and so they can download songs. So they can, maybe they can talk about Coldplay and what that sound is. So when you're saying it's kind of got a Coldplay feel, they can listen to it and they can understand what you're saying. Whatever it is, they have some feel for it. So that's a big difference than a change in the world of the Christian church. There's great changes in musical technology and the industry. If you're dealing with people who potentially could or desire to do music professionally, particularly in the Christian world, it used to be you had to get a label. You had to find somebody who could record your music. Now you can do your music yourself. You can go independent and you can go pretty far. We got a band in our church, Riley. They'll be some of the guys will play in worship tomorrow. They're doing it all independent. Now they could do a label, but the industry itself is fragmenting. The whole industry is changing dramatically. And so what is the things it's doing is it's giving musicians a lot of variety as of how to express themselves, if not fully professionally, quasi-professionally. And, getting out and doing gigs and doing recordings and marketing themselves and doing anything on the internet, all that kind of stuff is in the last 10, 15 years, dramatic changes in how people can express their giftings in music. The arts in worship, we've already talked about, is a hot topic in the church these days, a developing concept. Not just music, but visual arts. Film arts is a big issue now. How to use film, how to use that technology that's now workable in an average church. You can bring fairly high level visual imagery into the church. Dramatic arts has been part of the church experience forever, but use of drama, those kind of things, the ability to stage things. We do drama stuff particularly for outreaches. So that's all changing. So the arts is much more diverse than it was even 15 years ago in the church. And then the pastor and artist relationship is not just made up of musicians being converted now. It's also being made up of kids in the church growing up who are developing their own artistic gifts and their own vision. So you saw Pat and Joel and his other son, Josh, up there. They're creating music together, but they're also creating music separately. And the Bairds, another great example. So you've got kids growing up, and a lot of them are being trained not just in, okay, play the guitar, play the drums, play the piano, but they're violin and, they're... So this idea, and they're being trained, in a sense, with the church as a value, but with a desire to explore what their gifts are as a value as well. And so the church is now part of gifted people's experience. And so it's a wonderful opportunity we have. I think in the next 10, 15 years, you're going to see that churches have bands and orchestras built with kids who grew up learning how to play instruments in the church and finding expression. One of the things we want to do is if we have a forward vision for the arts in the church is see those kids and have them where they don't have to leave the church to express what God has given them. So things are changing dramatically. Now these differences, though, are primarily cultural differences. And that's very important to understand. there are differences between pastors and musicians, but they're primarily cultural. And you might think that stands to reason, but in a very prominent worship leader not too long ago said, it's just not possible for a pastor and an artist to be a friend, to be friends. You're just too different. This buying into this in this cultural mindset that pastors and artists are fundamentally different in the way they're wired. The reality is that's not true. Those are cultural differences. We are wired all the same way. We are wired to worship the Lord God. That's how we were created. That's what we're designed to do. We are like anyone else in the world. The fundamental reality of who we are is we're wired the same way. We're wired to be worshipers of God. And so we really should, rather than pondering our differences, we should be rejoicing on and building our commonalities, which are far more significant and far more pervasive and far more ultimately fruitful for the kingdom of God. So here are just some of our commonalities where pastor and artist share the same thing. We were created as image bearers of one God. We are all the same there. We live as children of God through God's mercy in Christ. If we are believers, we share the fact that our identity has been crafted around our childhood before God. We have been adopted by God, forgiven by God, but for the sake of and ultimately the benefit of our adoption in Christ. We've been given, we're called to live before God holy and being made holy. We all stand under that call to live holy and be made. We run to the same idols. The way fear of man operates in my life is going to be very similar to the way fear of man operates in an artist's life. You're going to find the same wrestlings. May over different issues, we may personality-wise express it differently, but I tell you what, you sit down and talk and have true fellowship with someone, you realize the idolatries don't change. The cravings don't change. We want approval. We want control. We want independence. We want things that God doesn't have for us, and we run after them and seek to serve them, and God calls us from those idols back to Himself. We've been given the differences of gift for the sake of the church. That's seen in this passage in Romans. And so, yeah, we have differences in gifting, but it's for a common cause. It's not, you know, God isn't, you know, creating, looking at people and saying, I've got to figure out some kind of mechanism to keep all these people in place. No, He created the mechanism and then He dispenses gifts to make it diverse. The mechanism is what matters. The church is what matters. We've been given differences of function for the sake of the church. No matter what your gifts are, there's functions in the church we need to operate in. We serve one another. We reach out to one another. We fellowship with one another. We bear one another's burdens. There are things that we all do that are irrespective of gift. And so we have this wonderful commonality in the church. We stand under the same Word of God. It's very fascinating. In verse 3, Paul says, everyone among you. So this passage is spoken to everyone in the church. In other words, pastors stand under it as well. Everything he says about how you should evaluate yourself and how you should look at your gifts, pastors aren't distinct preaching that to the people. Pastors are under that, along with the people. So we are all subject to the same Word of God. And so that begs the question, what characterizes the relationship between the pastor and the artist in your church? Is it differences or commonalities? If there's a sense in your church where the pastor and the artist, the pastor and the musician, whatever that expression is, that there really isn't an ability for us to be on the same page. Are you building on the right foundation? Are you stressing your differences? Are you accommodating cultural differences? Or are you focusing on gospel commonalities? One of the things we have to do as pastors is take responsibility to make sure that whatever cultural differences exist, they don't allow us to obscure the gospel commonalities. And we're going to be able to build. One of the things we've experienced at our church, we've been able to build with the artists in our church because we share together the things that are most important. And it allows us to talk about our differences as secondary issues, not as primary issues. So if you have an artist in your church right now, and you maybe it's somebody who you're just wrestling with over how they serve, how they, you know, those kind of things, you don't relate well, every conversation tends to kind of go like, I don't think we connected. Well, maybe you're too focused on it. Maybe you're an artist here, and you don't feel like you're being understood or understand the purpose of the pastor. Well, maybe let's take a step back and say, you know what, maybe I'm wrapped up in secondary issues, and I need to focus on the primary. So with that in mind, let me give you some core values. These are values that I think, if they're working in your church, they're from this passage, if they're working in your church between pastor and artist, you're going to be able to make great headway and see God really do things in your relationship and in the ministry of the church. So four values I want to draw from this passage, and I'm trusting that you guys will give me the liberty to make these applications without doing a whole lot of exegesis for the sake of a seminar. But the first one is humility. Verse 3 says, "For by the grace given to me, I say everyone among you, do not think of himself more highly than he ought, but to think with sober judgment, each according to the measure of faith that God has assigned." We're called to not think of ourselves more highly than we ought. That doesn't mean simply that we raise our sense of gifting above what it should be, but that we don't see who we are more important than other people. We don't view ourselves as essential. And so we see ourselves with sober judgment. We see that our gifts in a sober way. And that sober does not mean that we discount. Sober does not mean that we have false humility and we say my gift is nothing. Sober means God's given me a gift, but I don't want to be the one who promotes it or who declares it to be more than it is. I want to have a sober judgment. There's a lot of great stuff we could go to there about on evaluation, which I won't do, but we can talk about it if you guys want to have any questions about it. But a question for pastors here. Do we tend to value and deploy the contributions and gifts of our artists to the extent that they produce tangible benefits for our ministry goals? In other words, do we tend to take from the artist what works for us in our ministry context and presume that's what they're there for? They're a tool for me to use to promote the ministry I'm in. That's very easy for a pastor to do. I've talked to a lot of musicians, and that's where they said their experience in churches has been, they've come, a pastor has found out that they have a gift, they draw from them, you know, deploy them, it's great, but they start to realize this relationship is not based on who I'm as a person, it's based on what I'm doing for the sake of the church.
Yeah. I'm sorry, but I just did coffee for Eric Hughes.
Oh.
We had down his coffee.
Okay.
Can you elaborate on that a little bit more? Because I have been a pastor,
mm-hmm.
and switched to another church, and now I'm a worship leader for
yeah.
a pastor.
Yeah.
Very strong,
mm-hmm.
you know, and has a great, strong vision. And
yeah.
And so in one sense, I feel like I'm supposed to be at the disposal of that man.
Yeah.
He's my authority. He's my pastor.
Yeah.
And so in that sense, I kind of feel like I'm supposed to be a tool for him.
Yeah.
Where should it come in? You know,
well, it's great.
Isn't yeah. person, I feel I tend to think that that would be kind of egotistical of me and proud to think I've got to be, you know, I've got to be
yeah.
stroked as a person and feel
yeah, sure, sure, yeah.
Sometimes I do, I'm tempted to feel that way, and I just don't know where that.
Yeah. Well, you know, Jerry Bridges says the true indicator of a servant is that he's willing to be treated like one. So in a sense, you're right. As that man who's seeking to serve that pastor, you want to adopt that servant perspective, and whatever you need, I will do. But I'm speaking to pastors in this point. If you treat that man like a servant, if you treat him like he's there as a tool for your ministry, then you are not treating him the way you're meant to treat him. So in your situation, I would say, yeah, your posture should be, how can I serve? But I would think if the relationship gets built around, and sometimes pastors can be blind to this, can be very functional, can be very, you know, I need you to, you know, yeah, you know, or, I mean, nobody's going to say that, and it's usually not the way a relationship starts, but it's a relationship where it can drift, you know, it can drift that way, because it just becomes functional, I need you to do this, and you just, and it doesn't mean that a good functional relationship isn't good and workable, it just means as pastors, it's arrogant of us to think that we can simply call on that gift whenever we need it, to do whatever we want it to do, and treat that person like a gift package and not like an individual before God. Your time is valuable. Your resources are valuable. Your perspective is valuable. I need to draw from who you are as a person, not just your talent. But for artists, do you tend to hold my art perspective that affects your vision or enthusiasm for how you use your gifts in the church? One of the things we're talking about, particularly with a visual artist, is the idea of my art. And it's great. We had one of the things we tried to do, it's a very interesting conversation we've had with both of our musicians and our visual artists, because we've tried to start thinking about our preaching series and how can we use the arts more effectively in our preaching series. So things like, guys, could you write songs, worship songs or performance songs that would speak to the themes in the series in this book? We're doing Galatians or we're doing Ephesians or something like that. And could you write songs that we could sing and those kind of things? Or to the visual artists, we would love to display art that speak to the themes in this series. Themes of, you know, it's Galatians, themes of adoption, themes of freedom, those kind of things that are very prominent in Galatians. It's been a great dialogue because we've learned that what we're asking them to do puts them up against this sense of, well, you don't understand art. You know, you don't tell people what to create. Creation comes from within. And so there's a lot of dialogue. And so pastors have to be educated in a sense to, yeah, you know what, to say, listen, can you do, you know, because they'll talk about, one of the things that was really helpful to us is, okay, are you asking for illustration or are you asking for art? And by illustration, they're meaning, do you want this scene depicted in some way so that the average person can see, oh, that's about blank? Or do you want an artistic expression of something? And they explained it to us. It was very helpful, which means that you say the word freedom, okay, I will take that and I'll wrestle with that and meditate on that and try to create something that's authentic to me in that theme. But if I'm tied to it, has to look like, oh, freedom, then you've stifled the creativity. Now, very helpful conversation for us. Very helpful to see that we don't serve them by saying, and can you have it in 2 weeks? Whatever, you know, putting them under the gun, giving them, and kind of saying, and you know what? Everybody has to know what that's what it's about. One of the things that we've learned is, yeah, you've got to help. If you're going to get authentic art, you've got to give the artist the ability to tap what they tap and produce something that isn't trying to simply fulfill an obligation. Now, what we've also been able to tell them is, that's great, and that's helpful, but can you also occasionally do illustration? Can you give us something that we could put up and say, this is our graphic? You know, and so we're working together. What are we doing? We're trying to recognize that for us as pastors, we don't want to say, do your art, but do it our way. And we want the artists, and they're buying into it, okay, but we recognize that to serve the church, we've got to meet you guys a little bit. You know, we can't have you conform to our understanding of art without some awareness that you have purposes for this. And so there's an interaction you need to have with the artists, and this can be fine arts, can be can be any kind of art you're dealing with, where you respect the creative process, you respect the sense of art that fires the artist, but that you also help them understand there is also pastoral dimension to this we're working with as well. So we can talk more about that if you want to, but we need to learn. Bottom line is pastors and artists need to learn about the needs and the best way for us to serve one another. If we take the time to have those conversations, we'll have good fruit. That's humility. Faith, second one, pastors. Again, Romans 12, you see that in 3. According to the faith, grace given us in proportion to our faith. So you see faith is what Paul's appealing for in Romans is that God's given you a gift. Now use it boldly. Use it as if God's given it to you. It's not presumptuous to prophesy if you've been given the gift of prophecy. It's not presumptuous to lead with zeal if you've been given the gift of leadership. It takes faith. You step out and walk in faith in that which God has given you. Question, pastors, do you have faith to allow your musicians or your artists to contribute to the shaping and expansion of your church's artistic palette? Do you have an idea of what you think is good art and have all your artists fit into that? Are you willing to let them express and expand your artistic palette in your church? I think as pastors, if we're really going to be authentic and use the arts the way they're meant to be used, we have to allow the arts themselves to shape us, to educate us, to train us, to understand art. You see, here's an interesting thing. If you're an artist, it's important for you to recognize that the way most people in our culture understand arts is more entertainment. It's more affect me. So do something that affects me. So you see that in fine arts, you see that in music, and so people want art to affect them. But I think as pastors, we need to recognize that if we're really going to understand art, it's a whole culture and language that if we don't, in a sense, try to understand it, we'll never get it. It's to be gone out and you don't understand it per se. But for example, we need to understand that arts, they have their own language. They have, you know, textures, colors, moods, forms, all these things that are foreign to us as pastors are the language of the arts. And so we need to know some sense of what's going on behind what was produced to fully appreciate the purpose of that art in our church. And so we want the art to do that. We want it to affect us. Last night, great example. Brother comes up and he does basically a dramatic reading out of the psalm. Right in worship, boom. Up there, tremendously effective. It's dramatic art. That's what he's doing. He's an actor. And he's playing a part in worship. He's embodying the telling of a psalm. It leads to greater worship. It promotes the word of God. But you have to have that. If you're there going, wait. That's we don't do that at our church. We have a guy who does spoken word poetry in our church, which is kind of like rap without music. It's cadenced, but it's not rap because he doesn't use music. But he writes it and he's you've got a lot of content with it, but we've had to educate our church as to what this is about so they could understand it and appreciate it. As pastors, though, that can be a real difficult thing because your pastors can be consumed with what's working. Does it work? Does it not work? Example of this will frustrate the artists or the musicians. Couple of years ago, we do a Christmas concert where we invite the community and have a lot of our musicians who don't typically get a chance to perform. And we have a concert pianist who just doesn't get a lot of chance to play. And so we always let her do some pieces. She's excellent. So one year, she and an oboist did Claire de Lune for Christmas. Just did a Beautiful version of Clair de Lune. So in the follow-up after the concert, we had an hour-long discussion about whether Clair de Lune passes as Christmas music or not. And so if you're an artist here, you're probably thinking, oh my goodness, pastor spending an hour discussing something they know nothing about. We do that all the time. But we came up with this Clair de Lune line. So, you know, the bottom line, some guys were saying it wasn't Christmassy enough. And other guys were saying, no, it's, don't understand, not everything has to be Christmassy. It was beautiful. It's, you know, it's something people really enjoy listening to. It fit the mood. Nobody, I didn't hear any Christmas melody. And so we went back and forth on this. So finally we have sort of a Clair de Lune line where Clair de Lune is, I don't know if you guys ever heard of the Mendoza line. You guys familiar with the Mendoza line? If you hit below 200 in Major League Baseball, it's called the Mendoza line. If you're below the Mendoza line for any length of time, you usually get to sit down to the minors because everybody should be hit above 200. So the Mendoza line, this is like the Clair de Lune line. And so anything that's less Christmassy than Clair de Lune automatically gets axed. You know, Clair de Lune is like the line for the how far out from Christmas you can go. And but that's we live like that. We're always evaluating things on this very internalized, does it work or doesn't? That's a classic thing. A guy spends, you know, 3 days poring over a worship song, wrestling with the melody, getting the lines right, you know, just like he wants it. We do it in worship. Maybe the band doesn't get the tempo right, whatever. You know, the evaluation, did it work? It didn't work. You know, and so you can just go through these things and not realize that we need to sometimes stretch as pastors. And so really advocating for the arts to have a valid expression in your church, you need to be able to let them affect how you do things. For artists, are you willing to perform or serve in conditions which are not what you consider ideal for your art? One of the things I find sometimes in musicians, when you actually give them opportunities, or you give artists opportunities, they have a very, very high standard of what they need to perform well. Sound, environment, those kind of things. And trust me, you'll not get that in the church. You'll sit down to perform your piece, and there'll be kids screaming in the background. You know, it is not, you're in church, people are not going to understand it. It's just important to recognize you're working with amateurs in an amateur environment. So if you're a gifted artist, you're going to have to recognize that the sound isn't going to be what it should be. It's not all the time. Now, our tech guys work great, but they're not getting paid to do it. And the equipment can be in various states of disrepair. And so an artist needs to recognize that if he's going to serve in the church, he's going to have break down some of that artistic sensibility. We have guys in our church who are very gifted musicians. We asked them, and this is they really do well with this. We asked them a couple of years ago for an outreach to write and perform a song on about psychotherapy with a country feel, dressed up like cowboys for a skit we were doing. It's a very serious, heart-rending piece. But it was great. They just said, we're going to this. They took all their creativity and they wrote this song and they put together an arrangement and we put them on stage in a chicken coop and they did this I'm okay, you're okay song. And it was just guys who understand that, you know what, yeah, to serve the church, sometimes I have to do things that I hope guys outside the church who know I'm an artist don't ever see. You know? That's humble. It's faith. They're using their gifts with faith. Love, pastors, do your, he talks about there at the end of, let love be genuine. Paul, as he often does, comes back to the ethic of love. Let love be genuine. Abhor to evil, hold fast to what is good. So, love one another with brotherly affection. So there's, Paul is saying there in this is that, like he does so many places, above all things, put on love. If you don't know what to do, love one another. And so for pastors, do your artists know your love and care for them as people, not just as ministry assets? It's very important, particularly for families. One of the things I think as pastors we can do is we can develop a relationship with that person who's gifted, but not their wife, not their kids. And you'll often see this when you have folks come into your church who are artistically gifted, particularly if their spouse isn't, and this could be male or female, that the spouse is very, very comfortable taking a backseat position. So they'll, you know, and somehow you'll have interaction in some course, you'll meet them and they'll say, oh, this guy plays this instrument, and you'll talk to them and engage with them, and you'll see the spouse actually just back away because they're so used to being treated like a non-entity. You know, as pastors, we want to be different. We want to make sure that when a couple comes into our church and one of them is gifted, what they experience is love for them as people, love for them as a couple, love for them as a marriage. That we want to love and preserve marriages. We want to care for folks, not just because they're gifted, but because they're God's people. They're God's children. And so that's how we express love as pastors. For artists, do you love the brethren who are not artists? One of the things I think artists can do is tend to congregate with other artists, tend to kind of, who can talk my language, who can kind of do my thing. And one of the things, we've never had artist community groups, care groups. There's a lot of folks who do artist care groups. Let's get them together, care groups, so we can all build one another. That's great. We've always felt like the long-term benefit of having artists relate to people who are not artists serves them and the church much better than gathering all the artists together and putting them in the same group. You have a chance to relate and fellowship with other people. There's a reality out there that sometimes you miss. They need to get your perspective. You come at things from different angles. An accountant sitting with an artist, you'll both benefit. And so we would encourage to not have artists in the same sort of gathered together. And it doesn't mean you can't have a community, but it shouldn't be their fundamental community. We have a group of artists that are pulling together to meet for the sake of fellowship and interaction and sharing ideas. But all those folks are going to be in separate care groups. They have separate relationships. They're gathering together secondarily for the sake of their gifts, but primarily they're expressing themselves in their care groups. So, and then honor. Pastors, he says honor one another. Pastors, do your MAs regularly experience your appreciation, support, and investment, both for their contribution and for the radical fact that they're resisting conformity to the world simply by being involved in your church? For someone who's artistically gifted, the pull of the world is overwhelming. There's nothing. The world says to the artist, there's nothing there except rejection. Nobody will understand you. Nobody will appreciate you. Nobody will want what you have to offer. And if they do, they're just going to take it, and they're going to force you to do it their way. That's what the world thinks about the church. But if we can create a situation where folks recognize, yeah, you know what, and guys, this is very important if you're a pastor. The very fact that you have an artist, even if, you know, a Christian artist who's in your church, means they've already made a huge stride that other people don't have to make. They are in a culture that is not the culture they're most comfortable in, for the most part. They're interacting with people in ways that they have to work and operate constantly in their weaknesses because people don't understand. Their conversations, how many more conversations about the Phillies are we going to have before I can have a conversation about what matters to me? And so it's very important to understand that that when an artist takes a step into your church, it's a significant step of faith. And we want to honor them for it and appreciate them for it. And artist, do you celebrate your local church cred in the street? A lot of times, artists hide the church in their resume. They bifurcate. They have a church world and they have their artistic world. And one of the things I advocate for artists to do is say, you know what, my church is where it's happening for me. Hey, this is great. I'm out here. I'm in this community. I'm doing art out here. But you know what? What really matters to me is the church. We have a woman in our church, Rosella Washington, who's a jazz singer, very well respected in Philadelphia. She sings in all the jazz clubs in Philadelphia. One of the things about Rosella is she's out there talking the church, you know. And so everybody she plays with, she the top session musicians in Philly, guys who and you know really a lot of session guys throughout the country, but Philly's kind of a magnet on the East Coast for jazz. And so she knows them all, she relates to them all, and we've she's actually brought them out to church, and we've used them on our in our Christmas concerts. So we have guys in our Christmas concerts who are like who play. She just does a set with them. She'll have a pianist, she'll have a trumpet player. She has a trumpet player that I found out is nationally known recording artist who just came because she just keeps badgering about coming out to the church. So he played. We didn't have him on Sunday because he's not a member. He's not even a believer. But he came out. He did the concert for us, and we're developing a relationship with him. She has another guy named Gerald Veasley, who's a well-respected bassist. Through her relationship, we used him for a fundraising outreach for Covenant Mercies. What's she doing? They know that Rosella loves the church. And if she's going to be in their world, she's going to try to get him into her world as well. And so that's what you can do, but it takes that kind of honoring the church if you're an artist and not keeping it separate from your real life. Now, a couple of models. In our last 15, 20 minutes of how to relate together, I'm going to use this blackboard if there's chalk, but there's no chalk. This is just sort of a paradigm that I work in relating to artists. And I sort of have two artists in mind. How to work together. One would be what I call the performing musician. And performing musician is an individual or group in the church. Maybe it's a band. You got some folks who are in a band in the church. With a level of gifting and training and experience that would make them effective in service in the ministries of the church. So it might be, like I said, it might be a band. It might be a guy who's a singer-songwriter who writes stuff and plays, and he's gifted enough where you could do a coffee house with him, or he's or it might be somebody who's a, like I said, a pianist who's able to do accompany things well, or a violinist, or we're talking about musicians right now, but somebody who's talented, but probably is not going to express that talent much beyond the church. They're not going to be asked by others to come and go out and do it professionally. And so we want to know how to work with those folks. They're very serious. We're not talking about the casual musician. We're not talking about I dabble in this or that. We're talking about somebody who's very serious about their music or their art, but maybe not either gifting-wise or experience-wise beyond what the church can provide for them. Oh, great. And so if you think of the church as being this, that person or people, those people are going to kind of be embedded entirely in the church. They're going to be serving in the church. The context of the use of their gift, you know, they'll do weddings. They'll play at weddings. They'll do things you need done, special music, those kind of things. But that's going to be the extent of it for them. Maybe they'll get out. Maybe, and this is the way I sort of understand it, maybe they will do some things outside the church. Maybe they'll be part of a church outreach where the church, you know, does a concert in a park or something like that as an outreach. And so you're going to use them. So they'll be a little bit out into outreach, but they're clearly what's giving them opportunity to perform is the church. We want to make sure those folks feel the support of the pastoral ministry. We don't want to treat them like minor musicians. We want to let them know that their efforts, their pursuit of their gifts honors God according to Romans 12. They are using their gifts for the glory of God. We want to help them do that. We don't want to have this unspoken evaluation. Well, you know what? We only really, really talk to people like this. Now, not all of them can be on the worship team necessarily. Maybe they don't play the kind of instrument that you can use on your worship team. Maybe they have a different style. Sometimes a guitarist will have like a different style of music and he just can't adapt. Back in the day, we used to have guys who were like very into kind of speed metal sort of guitar. Very good at it, but you slow them down to worship speed and they just couldn't play. We had a guy who was a who was a punk drummer. And if you ever, like, listen to punk drummers, it's just really fast. And it's like 2 minutes of chaos, and that's it. But he couldn't lay down a basic beat. He had to be going fast, because that's how he taught himself to play. He just played, but that's all he did, all he could play. So he wasn't able to do that, but we were able to do things when we actually had a punk band for a while. Joseph's band, Mop Factor Interview. So they would do stuff. But you use them. But some things for those kind of folks. Pastors should look to deploy performing musicians in a variety of ways in local church. Worship service, outreach. Basically saying, listen, give thought to these. Know who they are. Some may actually be growing beyond that level and could benefit from the encouragement. Some may be young musicians, teens, who really have a gifting that isn't quite up to that level yet. But if they know you value their work, they're going to put the effort and time into it. Look to invest in performing musicians with training, bringing to worship God, which obviously those folks are here. Seminars, resources. Joseph's very good at giving books out. He'll find a young musician and he'll give out Bob's book, or he'll give out another book and just say, hey, listen, just wanted to give this to you to encourage you. Or what Joseph will do sometimes is say, you know what, here's a CD, listen to this. I think you got a sound that's kind of like this. Listen to this. Or if it's a songwriter, giving him input on songs, just sitting down and saying, yeah, here's great. Might be a 15-year-old, a 13-year-old writing songs. Just taking time. Yeah, this is great content. Why don't you study this, read this book. Give them that sense of encouragement to pursue that gift for the sake of the church. Performing musicians should be willing to serve where needed and not seeing a single opportunity and implied obligation to further opportunities. One of the things you deal with, and one of the things that can kind of push pastors away from using folks, is they feel like if I give you an opportunity here, I'm setting up an expectation for future opportunities. Well, pastors don't typically work like that. It's event by event. And I don't want to be locked into, if I use you here, next year when we do this again, the assumption is you're supposed to be in this. So, again, if you're a musician or an artist and you're here, the take-home point is, among the folks you relate to, hold each other to listen. We treat every opportunity like it's a gift, but we don't have an expectation. We've had folks who've worked a lot on a special music piece. We had to cut at the last minute. That tests character. It tests why you're doing something. It's where the needs of the church and the needs of the artist can really kind of clash. And so for artists, I'm saying, listen, be a servant. Don't have expectations. If a pastor knows that he can deploy you without raising your expectations, he's actually more likely to deploy you in the future than if he thinks he's going to have to pastor you through every time he doesn't use you. So that's a very important thing for musicians. Performing musicians should serve in areas beyond their music. In other words, you shouldn't look at, well, I'm a guitarist, and I'm whenever the church needs me, that's what I'm going to do. Then we'll do other things. Lots of guys are on the tech team. Besides that, just other ministries. I always encourage musicians, any artist, to make sure at least part of their ministry is outside their gifting. Just relate to people who don't have your gifting in the context of ministry. Performing musicians should welcome the input of pastoral ministry in both character and artistic expression. One of the things that will help you in your relationship with a pastor is seeking their input. Now, a pastor is not going to be able to drop in to the level maybe you want him to drop into, but he might be able to refer somebody to you. Hey, you know what? Right now, I wouldn't be able to help you the way so-and-so would, but he might get somebody else involved. But be that person who seeks the input of others. I'm a writer, and one of the things that's most difficult about anybody who's artistic is to have evaluation done to their stuff. That's a great step for everybody to learn, for pastors to learn how to encourage but critique, and artists to learn how to receive critique and benefit from it. Because you never know what's going to happen. I'm going to tell my story. My daughter, Melissa, she... she's always liked to sing, and she just sang around the house. When she got to be a teen, she would sing in the youth band on a rotation and stuff like that. But she's always sort of just kind of done it. She's like got so many other things she does in the church that she's never thought about singing. But so she had an opportunity to sing at a wedding for a friend of hers. And so she sang at the wedding, and somebody was there who knew that Mark Altrogi was working on a project for kids and was looking for a female vocalist. That person told Mark. Mark got to us and said, "Why don't you have her do a demo?" So she just went in one of the guys' offices and did a demo, sent it out to Mark, and just didn't hear anything for months. And it turned out that the project came out, and obviously they didn't need her for the project, and so we were able to walk through that process of, well, you know what? I guess God just doesn't have this for you. That really you're probably doing what he wants you to do. And so she was really able to go to the Lord and recognize. She'd never gotten hopes up that much because she thought it was a crazy idea to begin with. And so she just kind of said, okay, you know, it's easy for me to lay down. She laid it down. And 2 weeks later, Bob Coughlin called her and said, "We want to use you on the Come Weary Saints project." And so she wound up doing three lead vocals on that project and two on the Psalms project. But after she had died to the idea she'd ever sing. And so now she recognizes, and so she lives with this very healthy sense, you know what, I've got a chance to do this. They may need a different voice for a future project. I may not be on it. She's here. This is where she's going to live. In fact, she wasn't even on the worship team when she recorded. Joseph said, you know what, she's recording for Sovereign Grace, I should probably put her on the worship team. And so, but she's here. This is where she's going to live her life. Occasionally, she gets something like this. She gets a little bit out, but she knows her gifting and her calling is not to go. It's to serve here. And so what's meaningful for her is the thing she does, the children's ministry, the administrative type stuff she does for the church. And this is just fun. You know, it's just a lot of fun to come on conferences, things like that. What I want to say about that is I believe she's gotten that because of the world she's been brought up in. Not my world, but a world where we see gifting as gifting, not as identity. And so
when you say not my world, what do you mean?
My world is, you know, I mean, I'm in my world at home. I mean, I'm embedded in a world that doesn't see gifting as the goal. It sees my identity in Christ, not in what I do. And so I can't take credit for it as a dad because I've been in that same world myself. I'm in a world where you might get opportunities to speak or you might get opportunities to do something greater than you could ever do on your own. But nobody lives with that's the goal of life. And I think that's what we're trying to cultivate in our churches. That's what we're trying to cultivate in Sovereign Grace. Is, you know what? We do this to serve. If we have opportunity, that's great, but we don't live with the idea that, therefore, she's not going to live with the idea that, okay, what next project I want to do for her. You know, she doesn't live that way. She lives, that's not my life. That's not what I'm after. What I love is the local church. And so I think she's learning that, and because she's seen it all around, she sees so many musicians around her who've had opportunity to write songs, who are not living as if I've got to take the next step. You know, that's the value we're trying to hold out for folks. Now, some folks are going to have that gifting and they're going to be out. Now, maybe those folks are going to be here. They're folks who have the talent. Now, they could be, again, beyond not your worship team type people. They may be a professional musician. They may be somebody who's a violinist or somebody who's a singer. Rosella is an example. Rosella serves on our worship team, but she's a jazz singer. That's what she does. And she exists out here. Now, it's interesting because someone out here, in some cases, you may have somebody who really functionally exists while they're part of the church. They're, what they do is almost entirely outside the church. If someone is a concert violinist, that's a different world. And we serve them differently than if someone has got a band together and they're doing some local gigs. So we want to see this kind of, what is the nature of their relationship to the church and how we need to serve them? Now, for someone like a concert violinist, they're going to be moving this direction. They're going to be wanting to find connection. And part of our job is to give them that connection without then calling on them to simply to do their business differently. This is a profession for them. We wouldn't tell an accountant, you know what? Yeah, you can be involved in our church, but you have to do accounting. You know, 30% of your accounting has to be done for free in the church. No. How can we support you as a concert violinist? How can we support you as someone who is out in the world? How can we help you share the gospel? How can we help you make those connections? How can we care for you? And so as pastors, we've got to be doing a lot of work. Talking about, I forget the guy's name, but the guy who's here teaching the seminar for guitars, who's part of Switchfoot. He's part of the local church, but this is what he does, you know? And so the guys out in San Diego have to be very creative to know how to serve this, because his whole band isn't here. It's just him. He's got a connection. He's a member of a local church, and he's got to have, but he's got to be able free to be in this world to do it effectively.
You wrestle with someone that's out in that world who's used to that kind of quality, and they come back in the church, and they kind of frustrate the church because it's not the same quality.
Yeah. Well, I think that's where I think that you don't start with how can you serve here. You start with how can you be here. You serve out here. You serve God out here as a believer where you're at. Just be a guy here. Be a lady here. Be a brother or sister here. What's going to happen over time is they begin to recognize this is different. And they'll begin to say, okay, I'd like to serve. How can I? But you'll have a relationship to talk about those tensions. If they just kind of come and say, listen, how can I, I'm happy to use my violin here. You can say, well, you know, possibly, but we don't want to frustrate you. Nobody can keep up with you.
Just to jump on what you said and what you said earlier, I mean, I think that's why it's so important to go back to those foundational commonalities of why are we here? Why do we exist?
Yeah.
I mean, I have a really dear friend who's a brilliant graphic visual artist.
Yeah.
He's so passionate about art and feelings that come in art. And he can get frustrated with what he considers cheesy in the church,
like
Thomas Kincaid and stuff like that.
You know? Yeah.
And not to
no names.
I'm sorry. Not people.
Yeah.
Take.
I know. Yeah.
Everyone has their own thing.
Yeah.
But we try to talk about, you know, what should really make us passionate?
Yeah.
You know, what should really trouble us? You know, and it should be the gospel. It should be character growth. You know, and that really.
But we can't set him up as antithetical. We have to recognize that, okay, he's, the things that matter to him do matter. And so it's not like you have to dump all your thinking and adopt my thinking, you know, so, but it is, you know, stressing our commonalities.
Well, I think of the term that we talk about is what's the controlling passion?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it doesn't mean we can't be excited or passionate about art, but if that begins to become the controlling dominant passion, and it displaces the gospel so that you get upset about things, then I think, would you think there's some reorientation that maybe needs to happen?
That's good. That's good.
Actually, that was a question I had. I mean, I didn't want to actually use an artist and kind of tell them, this is what you have to do it this way. And this way, because I don't think actually at the end of the day I'm going to get good art from that person.
Yeah.
But neither do I want to just kind of leave them alone and say that you have art for art's sake.
Yes.
And so I'm wondering how, if you could speak at a heart level in the creative process, how do we guide, nurture, cultivate things? They're doing art for God's sake.
Yeah.
So at a deep level, there's someone to express passion for God in their art.
Yeah, my experience with artists is let them orient to who you really are. and give them the space to do that. A lot of times an artist is going to take a lot longer to join the church. Don't press them toward membership. Not that membership isn't important. I mean, in our world, membership is very important. But help recognize that there. It's almost like, in that sense, it's like a minority. You know, you don't just, hey, come on, you're like us. You just look different. Recognize that there's fences they have to jump over that other people don't have to jump over. Help them, come alongside them, but help them also to normalize. We can't create a separate church for folks. And so, and what'll happen is as God draws them, one of the things we do is we communicate to people, and this is generally speaking, but it applies to artists as well. Listen, our goal is not to get you here. Our goal is to get you into a local church. And so if this isn't where God has you, if you don't feel the connection there, then let me help you find a place. And I'll walk with you as you look for somewhere else. And as pastors, I think if we have that perspective, listen, I'm not looking to gather you here. I'm looking to help you find a place where you can fit. And walk with them through and say, okay, listen, why don't you try these three churches and let's sit down, let's talk about your experience. And then you compare it to ours and, you know, just don't be unpastored in it. You know, and interact with them. You'll find that you build a trust relationship. You find that you help them evaluate what they're really looking for. They won't feel that you're selling them something. You'll be able to talk the same. It's a back end way to talk the same language. What are you looking for? Well, yeah, okay, that's good. So that's a great way, I think, for somebody who's kind of not a joiner, to not put out them. You need to join our church or need, but where's God have you? Can we both agree that you're supposed to be part of a church? Now the only question is, where God have you?
We appreciate you talking about focusing on commonalities.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're having a whole seminar on pastors and artists.
Mm-hmm.
We're having seminars on how pastors can affirm accountants and things like that. There's some unique thing that can be a challenge. And on this bubble that's on the edge of the church, one of the things our worship pastor has said to us before is he says, artists need an audience. Whether you paint, whether you do whatever, there's an appreciation for what you do, and that's going to come from people. And one of the challenges that I think we felt at times is people that are saying, God's gifted me this way, how can I be used in the church? That's not where the tension comes. The tension usually comes in somebody who, it's almost like the church is their most readily present group to draw an audience from.
Yeah.
So I'm performing a concert, can I promote it at
church? Yeah.
And if you say, well, you know, we don't let the accountant and say, I can do your taxes and I'll give you a 10% discount.
Yeah.
But that's harder to navigate those waters for some reason than it is the other. Do you have any, can you comment to that aspect of it?
Yeah, let me, I have a few bullet points here and I think they'll cover some of that. And then I'll fill in the gaps. The pastor should allow for reasonable promotion of the professional musician's non-church activities within the church. I think that, we should say, listen, if you're doing something and a concert now, if it's at a bar and, it's inappropriate, I understand that, we can't promote that. But if we got a band doing a show, it's going to be a non-alcoholic show in one of the biggest clubs in Philly, we're going to tell people. We're going to announce to the church. Go out and support Riley as they're going to do this. Let's fill that building full of our folks. Because I think it's just a great way to reach out. And we want them to feel our support. We've also done CD release concerts where, just use our facility, CD release concert. We're behind you on this. So to promote those kind of things within reason, obviously what you run into is, well, you did him, but you're not doing me. Well, he's good and you're not. But you have to be careful. But I think what happens is people do recognize, you know, if someone develops their gifting and their skill, if it's a recital, we'll help people see. Yeah, sometimes it's on a care group level. Let's all go out. We're going to all go out to this recital. Thinking small church that way. But I think it is appropriate. We have a girl who's doing a show, an art show down in one of the galleries in Philly. So listen, folks, let's go down there. Let's go down there and see. Let's support her in that. Like we would an accountant who's in the middle of tax season, we're going to help him, cut him breaks. We're going to serve people in their realities. Professional musicians should serve in ways unrelated to their art. I mentioned that before. I think it's very important for people to not to see art as their only avenue of service. It's going to help them and help the church. Both pastors and musicians should develop a clear and communicated idea of what support looks like in reality. That means when someone says, "We'll support you," or the artist says, "We'd really love your support," a lot of times, what does that mean? And I found those are some of the most difficult conversations to have, but some of the most essential conversations to have. So let's talk about support. What do you guys mean? Here's what we can do. Where can we find common ground? If you don't have those conversations, there's a tremendous amount of misunderstanding and ultimately distrust that takes place there. The church should never take advantage of the professional musician financially. Someone who makes their money on something, the church, like any other trade, should be willing to pay for it. Performing musicians, on the same way, should view their serving in the church as a ministry and not as a gig. So the way I would encourage for it to happen is to help musicians understand that, listen, your job is to come and offer your gifts however the church can use them. Church, your opportunity is to recognize that this person is taking something that has value in the marketplace and is willing to offer it to us. We want to bless them like we would an accountant. If someone offers accounting services, yeah, if it's to the poor, sure. If it's to the church, we're gonna pay for it. We're gonna pay you what you, because we want you're serving in so many other ways. We want this to be a blessing to you. So it removes that sense that I'm being used or that the church is being used. So both musician and pastor should understand how pastor care oversight functions in the relationship. How do they evaluate character qualifications? One of the issues, particularly for Christian world type music, is how much does the pastor's character evaluation really matter? Does a pastor really have an ability to say, listen, I don't think your character should allow you to perform? One of the things I found is that musicians are all about, I want accountability, until accountability means you've got to go and confess your sin to people who may take gigs away. And so I think there's a reality. You got to talk about that ahead of time. Don't talk about accountability, either pastor or musician, in a superficial way. What exactly do you mean by accountability? When I understand accountability, I need to understand what the basis of your ministry is. If you're holding yourself out as a representative of the gospel, are you willing to put yourself under at least the diaconate requirements of the scriptures? And if you are not fulfilling those requirements, are you willing to step back from ministry until you do fulfill them and have someone validate that? It's better to have that conversation ahead of time than be in that awful situation where you know the guy's marriage isn't what it should be. But, you know, because what happens, I found, is that it's ministry, and I'm going to say this in a way that hope doesn't offend musicians. I just think it's a temptation of the heart. It's ministry until you start messing with it, and then it's my job. You can't take my job away from me. And I think what musicians understand is that, no, when you're doing ministry and you're getting paid for it, it still is ministry. Or treat it like a job. But I think most musicians recognize they can't, Christian musicians can't sell their music as job. The marketplace is a ministry marketplace, not a job marketplace. So you find yourself in a place where you need to be qualified in character, or you shouldn't be doing it. You shouldn't represent Christ in the wrong way. So, finally, pastors should be willing to create unconventional pastoral strategies, because the activity of professional musicians may not line up with existing care structures. I think that's what they're doing for, talking to the guys about helping guys who are professional Christian musicians. Yeah. They're touring, they're different rhythm of life. Guys who are doing gigs are often doing them at night. Just a whole different world. You have to be able to be creative. Don't just kind of force people into your structure or leave them devoid of care. Professional musicians must not allow their performing lives to disconnect them from meaningful care and fellowship in the local church. You have responsibility, if you're a musician or an artist, to adapt your life to the care of the church.
You've been listening to a seminar by Andy Farmer, which was given at our Worship God 2008 conference. It has been made available to you through Sovereign Grace Ministries. Sovereign Grace is primarily devoted to planting and caring for churches. We also hold conferences, train leaders, and publish books, music, and audio and video messages. For more information, visit www.sovereigngraceministries.org or call us at 301-330-7400.